A reading from the Gospel of Luke. Jesus and his disciples arrived at the country of the Gerasenes. I think that's how you say it. Gerasenes. Yep. Which is a land opposite of Galilee. As he stepped out onto land, a man of the city who had demons met him. For a long time he had worn no clothes, and he did not live in a house, but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he fell down before him and shouted at the top of his voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." For Jesus had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For many times it had seized him. He was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles. But he would break the bonds and be driven by the demons into the wilds, into the wilderness. Jesus then asked him, "What is your name?" He said, "Legion," for many demons had entered him. They begged him not to order them to go back into the abyss. Now there on the hillside, a large herd of swine was feeding, and the demons begged Jesus to let them enter these. So he gave them permission. Then the demons came out of the man and entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. When the swineherd saw what had happened, they ran off and told it to the city and to the country. Then people came out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. Those who had seen it told them how the one who had been possessed by demons had been healed. Then all the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them, for they were seized with great fear. So he got into the boat and returned. The man from whom the demons had gone begged that he might be with him. But Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you." So the man went away, proclaiming throughout the city how much Jesus had done for him. How about that gospel story? Pretty weird, huh? I mean, we hear about how Jesus healed a guy who had been plagued by a legion of demons. This person didn't just have one inner demon to grapple with, but like an entire army. His mental state was so fragmented by this diabolical presence that he couldn't even clothe himself properly. And he lived all alone, naked, in what was essentially a graveyard. He probably fell asleep most nights in a tomb that had been raided at one point and emptied by grave robbers. Now, because of all of this, the townspeople, they didn't really know what to do with him, other than try to keep him in chains, but he always found a way to break free and escape. But then Jesus comes along and he heals him. And we're told that this man was restored to a right state of mind. And the word that's used for right state of mind here is a word that is basically synonymous with wisdom in the ancient world. So this means that the man was not only liberated from a legion of demons, but he also discovered the depths of wisdom in this encounter, in this healing from Christ, right? In this encounter with Christ. But most importantly, we're told that from that day forward, the man no longer went streaking in public anymore. Thanks be to God. Alleluia. Alleluia. Now, I think that most people today, when hearing a story like this, they feel like it has nothing whatsoever to offer to the modern, sophisticated, educated person. After all, we are so much more enlightened now than our ancestors ever were. We are rational people who believe in science, which means that we don't believe in things like talking snakes and demons with horns and pitchforks anymore. But what most people don't seem to realize these days is that you can still be duped by something a talking snake says, even if you don't believe in that talking snake. As the famous psychologist Carl Jung once wrote, whether you believe in literal demons or in something in the unconscious mind that plays diabolical tricks on you, it's all the same to me. In other words, just because many, if not most people today, no longer believe in literal demons, this does not mean that our society is any less oppressed by some evil force wreaking havoc on our minds. As Jung also wrote, contemporary man is blind to the fact that with all of his rationality and all of his efficiency, he is still possessed by powers that are beyond his control. His demons have not disappeared at all. They just have new names. They keep him on the run with restlessness, vague apprehensions, psychological complications, and an insatiable need for pills, alcohol, tobacco, and food. So to ask the question, was this guy in the story, this possessed man, was he possessed by real evil spirits or just by some sort of psychological issue? To ask that question is to entirely miss the point. In fact, if you and I see a stark divide between all things psychological and all things spiritual, it might just be proof that our own minds are just as fragmented and disjointed as the possessed man's mind was. In the most bizarre part of this whole story, the demonic legion, they beg Jesus not to banish them into the abyss, whatever that means. Apparently, abyss is not a synonym for Disneyland for demons. So they plead with Jesus, asking him to drive them into a herd of pigs instead. Jesus, for whatever reason, he agrees to this. And the next thing we hear about in the story is a piggy genocide. Once the demons enter the pigs, the herd rushes like mad down a hill, off a cliff, and into a lake, where all of the little piggies sink to the bottom. Apparently, demons have the power to break through chains and shackles, but not the power to swim. Now, for the pig herders, this was the equivalent of several months' worth, possibly even several years' worth, of wages going right down the drain. But for us today, well, we're offended because this whole episode is just an egregious waste of delicious bacon. To quote the wise and all-knowing comedian Jim Gaffigan, bacon is so great. Even the frying of bacon sounds like applause. Do you want to know how good bacon is? To improve other food, people wrap it in bacon. What a waste. How could Jesus let this happen, right? Doesn't he care about the little piggies? Now, many people have suggested that Jesus let all of these pigs die because he was Jewish and pork isn't exactly kosher, right? But you'd think he'd have just a little bit of compassion, at least, on those Gentile pig herders who lost all of that income. You'd think. Perhaps not. I don't know. By that time, the pig had become the symbol in the Jewish mind for the corrupt and oppressive Roman government. Many Hebrew people viewed Romans as swine. So this isn't just about the pigs, but what the pigs symbolized. One of the lessons to be learned from this story is that in order to be restored to a right state of mind, in order for us to come back to a place of wisdom, in order to overcome all of our inner demons, we have to stop consuming all of the crap that corrupt politicians and economic leaders are urging us to consume. It's not that there's anything wrong with the pork in and of itself, but pork was seen as a delicacy in the Roman Empire, in Roman culture, it was highly valued. Moral of the story, if we want to overcome our inner demons and recover not just a right state of mind, but become reacquainted with wisdom herself, we will have to detach ourselves from many of those things that society very often places a high value on. It's part of the healing process. Sure, you may balk at the idea of someone being demon-possessed today. But if you can't go 5 minutes without your cell phone, or an hour without logging on to your social media account, if you can't make your way through your day without the bottle, or a joint, or some pills, or some porn to take the edge off, if you can't discern the difference between actual truth and all of the propaganda being vomited on you by all of the talking pigs on Fox News and CNN, then I hate to break it to you. You and the demon-possessed guy, you have a lot more in common than you're probably letting yourself admit. Do you want to know what the most alarming part of this whole story is? It's not the idea that someone can be possessed by an army of demons, or that a diabolical supernatural force can drive Porky Pig to his watery doom. The most terrifying thing in this whole story is not what the demons do. The most terrifying thing is how the people respond to the healing of this demon-possessed man. The people from the city and the countryside came out to see what had happened. And when they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. Then the people of that region asked Jesus to leave, for they were seized with great fear. Question: where was all of that fear before? When a naked demoniac ran through their city streets, when he tore through every shackle and chain that they tried to bind him in? Why are they afraid now, now that the man is healed? I suppose his dumpster fire of a life must have been good entertainment for them before. When all of the successful townspeople started to get down on themselves, at least they could always say, our lives may not be all that great, but at least we aren't as screwed up as Demon Dave over there. But now they can no longer compare their lives with his and feel good about themselves. They can't change the channel anymore to tune in to his crazy, to watch from afar what was happening on his side of town so that they could feel good about all of the wonderful things happening on their side of town. This man's healing seizes them with fear. We can't have any more of those people living on the margins of our society, getting their shit together, Jesus. No. I mean, if this demon-possessed guy who lived on the outskirts of our society, who literally had nothing, not even a shirt on his back, if he can suddenly come to his senses and discover wisdom, what does it say about all of us sane, successful people living within society? What does it say about all of us who are living in the comfort of the burbs, who have nice homes and stable incomes and picture-perfect families, but who have failed utterly to figure out how to acquire the one indispensable virtue that this man has acquired? Wisdom. If Demon Dave is now wiser than all of us, if the guy who used to go streaking naked through town now outshines all of us whenever it comes to his character, what does it say about all of us who have played by all of society's rules. For if the guy who has no family, no home, no money, no job, no friends, no clothing, if he can discover wisdom without the aid of any of those things that we work so hard to acquire, then it means that all of our family values and luxurious houses and six-figure salaries and powerful careers and social media followers and closets full of fancy clothing, it means that none of it will ever lead us to wisdom or to ultimate happiness. For how happy can your life really be, even if you have everything, if you haven't the foggiest clue as to how to live your life well and wisely? For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world but forfeit his very soul? No, Jesus. No. We can't have you making any more sages out of demon-possessed people. Because once they are liberated, they will only reveal just how much we ourselves have been possessed by our collective self-deception. So leave. At the end of the story, the guy who had been healed begs to go with Jesus. Who can blame him? I mean, the people in town liked it more when he was possessed. Who wants to live in a society where people prefer insanity over wisdom? Where people are more afraid of someone regaining their senses than they are of someone who is imploding in on himself because of his inner torment? One would think that it would have been more compassionate if Jesus would have let the man come with him. But in the end, Jesus urges the man to stay. And he encourages him to share his story, to talk openly about just how much God has done for him. Perhaps Jesus knew that this man had a history, a backstory, that he would never be able to outrun. I mean, we often believe that if we could just get some distance between ourselves and the circumstances that are making us miserable, then everything will somehow magically get better. Life will go better for me if I am around different people and living in a better place. But as the saying goes, wherever you go, there you are. Our shadows, our trauma, our emotional baggage will always follow us around wherever we go. And I think Jesus knew this, which is why he urged the man to stay. My friends, the path to inner healing isn't to run from the people or places or circumstances that trouble us, or to repress the painful parts of our story that we don't like. Rather, the path to healing is to learn how to live by a different story, the story of God's great love for us, wherever we happen to wind up in life.